The most important position on the field. And, oh, it wasn't a good day for quarterbacks. It's been a story in the NFL, and now it's affected the New Orleans Saints. Sean Payton going to have to do his best coaching job ever now to keep this team afloat. Tigers in a laugher. ULL so bad they shortened the game. Let's get to some big games. But we'll recap it all today. Monday, September 16th, 2019.
Shotgun snap comes in on fourth down. Ryan throws left side. Julio Jones with a catch. Got a block. Uh-oh. And Jones on the loose to the 40. Breaks away at the 30. Down the left sideline to the 10. Looks over his shoulder at the 5. And flies in for 6.
Scales down the ball, O'Donnell the hole from the right hash, angle to the left, good placement, boot by Eddie Pinheiro, kick to the uprights, and the kick is good for the win! Pinheiro with the De Niro kick to send Denver down as time expires. Bears 16, Denver 14, they escape with the victory on the road.
Ballo move it to the near side hash. Third down and 12. Ball at the 14-yard line of Northwestern State. Burrow takes the snap. Tight pocket. Fires. And catch going to be made. Terrace Marshall has it. He's got a touchdown. 14-yard touchdown reception for Terrace Marshall.
What's up, Acadiana? How we doing? Happy Monday to you and yours. One game shy of another hat trick, but did anything happen that we didn't expect to happen on the collegiate front? LSU with a 65-14 win over Northwestern State. Give the Demons some credit early, but it is human nature. When you hear it, you know it. Try as you might, you come out a little bit flat, and good for the Demons to put a couple of points on the board. Then LSU said enough is enough. They pitched a shutout in the second half en route to a 65-14 win over Northwestern State. Another vintage game for Joe Burrow, 21 of 24 for 373 yards. He had a touchdown run. He had a couple of touchdown passes. He leads the league. He leads the country in just about every statistical category. So, albeit a blowout, Joe Burrow still in contention in the Heisman Trophy race. But if you watch Alabama play and you watch Georgia play and some of these other teams play, yeah, this LSU defense has a ways to go. There is no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Jacob Phillips, after the ball game, was ticked off that the Demons even crossed the goal line once, albeit even twice.
You know, this is a team that shouldn't have scored, you know, anything on us just because of the defense that we have. And, you know, we got to do that next week. We got to, the week after that, every week we want to have it where nobody can score on us.
Got to get better. The Tigers will go on the road. It's their SEC opener in Nashville as they take on the Vanderbilt Commodores. It'll be a 1 o'clock, 11 a.m. kickoff in Nashville. So it's an early morning rise and shine for the Tigers. They're favored by 20 points. To get this thing started. Vanderbilt 0-2. They had a bye week last week, so they'll have 2 weeks to prepare. But the talent level, once again, but this time you're on the road, so you'll be focused. You're playing against an SEC opponent, so you'll be focused. Meanwhile, the UL Raging Cajuns, oh my goodness, it was 56-6 at the half. Texas Southern's coach comes over to Billy Napier and says, dude, we got no shot. Can you help us out? Both parties agreed, let's, instead of going 15-minute quarters, let's cut it down to 10-minute quarters. Let's get this thing over with. UL wins it 77-6 over Texas Southern. They had 440 yards on the ground. They didn't just prepare last week for Texas Southern. They were preparing for a much more difficult task at hand. And Billy Napier, after the ball game, set his sights solely on Ohio U.
We got a great challenge in front of us. You know, I think it's one of the most well-coached teams I've had a chance to evaluate and compete against. You know, just in terms of how they play. You know, they've got a first-class program with a first-class legendary coach who I have tremendous respect for. They do the fundamentals well. You know, they rush the ball, they stop the run. They get takeaways, they don't turn it over. They're really sound in special teams. They tackle well, they block well. Their quarterback is very efficient, makes good decisions.
He knew an awful lot about Ohio U right after playing Texas Southern. So that tells me they really didn't care that much about the Tigers from Houston. They want to go on the road and see if they can get a win. All right, so that'll be at 1 o'clock in Ohio, the Cajuns at Ohio U. My goodness gracious. When it rains, it pours. I'm so sick and tired of the Los Angeles Rams. I'm even more sick and tired of the officials. We all know what we're talking about. Jared Goff goes back to pass. As he is, before he is following through, the ball gets jarred. It's picked up. It's a fumble picked up by Cam Jordan. The official blows the whistle, unbeknownst to everyone, thinking that it was a forward pass. Could not have been 100% sure. There's no possible way. Cam Jordan takes the ball into the end zone. It would have been a 13-6 lead for the Saints. But no, wait a minute. They blew the whistle. Something that they're told time and time and time again, play the thing out because you always got replay in your back pocket. Never stop the play, ever. They did, took the touchdown off the board, realized it was a fumble, gave the ball to the Saints. Week after week after week, it just keeps, it's just to the point of being sickening. It's just absolutely sickening. To make matters worse, prior to that, Drew Brees tears a ligament in his thumb on his injured throwing hand, and now the reports are out he's going to miss at least 6 weeks. He'll have surgery to repair the damage. The specific ligament torn is the ulnar collateral ligament in his thumb, Brees said after the game. He felt, you could see it, he went to go reach for a ball on the bench. He couldn't even pick it up, dropped it, and that was all she wrote. He said he's never had a harder time gripping a football in his career. So significant. But Teddy Bridgewater is the highest paid backup quarterback in the league. Didn't get much help yesterday, did he? I mean, it was pretty bad. Right? I mean, think about it. You had dropped passes, way too many penalties. The defense on the field way too long got worn down, and the offensive line was awful. You cannot stop Aaron Donald with one player. You just can't do it. He is too good. The Saints are totally different without Drew Brees. There's no question in there about that. Will Lutz was awesome. The defense hung in there, but they didn't get much offensive help. Here is Sean Payton talking about his backup quarterback, Teddy Bridgewater.
Listen, I think when we watched this tape, Teddy came in ready to go. You know, the guys around him, particularly the penalties that we faced all of a sudden, first and 20, I thought he was ready to play. And look, he's a pro. He knows how to win. He knows how to win in this league. So, I didn't think we played particularly well around him. And I think when we watch that tape tomorrow, it's not going to be pleasant for some guys.
Sean Payton said, we're going to find out and we're going to see, we're going to put the best players on the field. We've got a quadruplet of guests today. Brooks Cabina, in his Monday time slot from The Advocate, will go over LSU and particularly their defense. They had a total of 7 starters remained on the sidelines. Sadiq Charles, Jamar Chase, Thaddeus Moss, Rashard Lawrence, Glenn Logan, Kalavon Chaisson, and Michael Divinity. Orgeron today said Divinity would be good to go. Chase would be good to go. Out again for the Vanderbilt game, Rashard Lawrence and Glenn Logan will not play. Kalavon Chaisson will be a game-time decision. So Brooks Cabina will join us. We'll try to control and calm down Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, but he's livid. He is livid. And the Saints have to somehow tread water and keep this thing afloat till number 9 gets back. So we'll talk with Bob Rose. In hour number 2, Nick Fontenot will talk about the Cajuns. 70. I don't care who you play. 77 points. 77. And then Ross Dellinger. The Mad Hatter gets an upset. What's going on at USC? And some other big games around the board that are coming up this weekend. How about Georgia hosting Notre Dame and others? So Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated will join us as well. First time out of the day, it's a Monday afternoon quarterback session. And we'll get busy with it with Brooks Cabina next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
Line drive punt going to be handled by Palmer at the 50. 45-40. Cuts back. Near side hash. 25-20. 15-10-5. He'll roll it on in for a touchdown. 54-yard punt return for a score. And Trey Palmer, the freshman out of Kentwood, Louisiana, makes it 57-14.
Part of the benefits of a 65-14 win, you get to open up, clear the bench, play everybody. This LSU report brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the dream of every trucker to own the best, and the best is a Peterbilt. We've got the best that covers LSU. Brooks Cabina of The Advocate. So, Brooks, what do you learn from a 51-point win? What do we learn from that?
Well, it was a 51-point win, but it was awful close at halftime. And I think when you look at that, there are some concerns with the secondary. And we've, at The Advocate, you can find out some stories we had over the weekend, broke down some film. This is a team that struggled in zone coverage on defense. And Ed Orgeron was very honest about that, candid on that on Saturday night. And again, today when we asked him about it, and you know, it's something where they're not going to be able to just man up and play tight defense on the secondary the rest of the season. I mean, you know, just naming some receivers that they'll see down the line, Alabama's got Jerry Jeudy, and you know, maybe you'd want to have to run zone coverage at some point. You're going to have to, I mean, you can't just play man coverage all the time. So, you know, they got some things to tighten up, and some of it has to do with some of the absences they had on defense, Michael Divinity, and then, you know, coach a decision, and then out, you know, on the line, you've got some issues raised there. It seems like Rashard Lawrence and Glenn Logan, the two starting defensive ends, are going to be out longer than expected. Ed said that they wouldn't be playing this week, and he didn't have a timeline. And if you saw on the sideline, Glenn Logan was actually on a scooter. He had his knee propped up on there, and it was looked like his ankle was wrapped up. So you know, Rashard Lawrence is walking around in sweat. So you got some issues there, and they have some pass rush issues there. So missing both of your starting defensive ends, you got some issues. So defense is certainly something that LSU is going to have to figure out in the next coming weeks without those guys there.
No question. Coach O said we can't just do a 4-man rush and try and attack the quarterback. It's up to Dave Aranda now to come up with some exotic packages in which to do this. What's happened to the, quote, green team? It hasn't been maybe we need to water a little bit because it looks a little brown right now.
Well, you know, it was made up of players that weren't eligible for Saturday. You know, so Caleb on Jason, he's questionable again this week with injury. He would definitely be a part of that package. And you saw twice Shelton Epler, the Northwestern quarterback, get popped on a couple of stunts inside from outside linebackers, both on the same kind of stunt from outside to in. Both Ray Thornton and Andre Anthony are there. And I think if you look at the film, you can kind of tell that they're a step or two behind what Chaisson would be when it comes to speed. Also, you know, the green team would probably most likely include Rashard Lawrence on there as well. But, I mean, at the same time, this is a Division II. This is an FCS team that we were talking about with Northwestern, and a winless FCS team that lost to Division II Midwestern State. I had to Google it to find that it was in Texas, and they had lost to them 33-7 the week before. So you would hope that some of your depth would be able to get there with four guys rushing the field. And, you know, Ogeron said again today that they're going to have to be more creative in creating a pass for us. And that's something that anybody watching LSU is pretty familiar with the past couple of years. Last year they had to do it without Caleb on, and they're having to do it again now. And I think mostly the takeaway from that is these are games that LSU were supposed to win with Northwestern and coming up against a winless Vanderbilt. I know that's SEC play, but if you're trying to prevent someone from getting injured further, it looks like these are the games to rest them.
Bruce Cabino of The Advocate. Quarterback got rid of the ball really, really quickly. It's hard to get a pass rush when he's getting rid of the ball in less than 2.5 seconds. So maybe defensive linemen have to learn to jump up a little bit, maybe knock a pass or two down, make him hold it onto it a little bit more. Little things like that, I think, are part of the plan.
Yeah, I mean, he is very accurate. It's funny because I'm trying to do a lot of data research with Joe Burrow in this new offense. And the funny thing is, if he completes 83% of his passes, you're not going to find much of a trend other than, oh, he got scrambled out of the pocket and completed a pass. Oh, he had plenty of time and he completed a pass. You know, he's completing it despite whatever situation he's in. Saturday, he was 21 of 24, three incompletions. One of them was an interception. And talking to him about that afterward, it's kind of like talking to a baseball pitcher. You know, I used to cover minor league baseball in my previous job. And talking to baseball players, especially pitchers, was awfully refreshing because they could tell you every single thing that broke down to every single pitch. And Burrow was like that with the pass. He's like, you know, it was because I asked him, was it just something you were trying to force there? And, you know, I've heard that answer time and time again. But he was like, no, you know, I rolled out. We had run that route several times before, and the safety had never cut in on that before. So I threw it thinking that he would never do it. And that was the first time he did, and he came in and he intercepted the ball. So, like, he's got plenty of he thinks everything through. He's very smart with the ball, and it's very clear why they've crafted this offense around him. And he's showing everyone watching football now why he's being considered a Heisman frontrunner.
He is. He's been spectacular. There was one point in time in the game where he was on the sideline. Looked like he was not very happy about something. Do you recall that? And did he ever give an explanation as to what that was about?
I don't recall. If you give me some more context, I might be able to answer.
I can't remember. Anyway, it's no big deal. I think he's okay. A perfectionist, and I think he is. You know, I think he wants every time they're in the red zone, he wants touchdowns and not field goals. So I think that's what it was. But anyway, no big deal. Brooks Cabina, kind enough to join us. Ed Ingram, any latest report on him? We thought we'd hear something last week. Haven't. Anything this week?
Now, obviously, there's a lot going on behind the scenes on this. Ogeron was asked about it today and says that he feels like he's going to hear something soon. Either today or the next few days, and he thinks it's going to be positive. Right now, so Ed Ingram has been around the team for the past year, and if he gets reinstated, the only thing getting in the way of playing in an actual game would be the NCAA acclimatization period, which is 5 days before you can go full pad. So that would mean he would have to practice today to get on the field against Vanderbilt, and then they have walkthroughs on Friday. Mm-hmm. So really, you're not looking at anything realistic, Ingram joining the team till at least Utah State. But like I said, there's a lot going on behind the scenes, and nothing that I have to report right now officially. But like I said, Ogeron said he feels like he's going to hear something positive the next few days.
Yeah. Sure sounds like it's moving in the right direction. LSU players talked about hands down. They weren't ready to go. And that's human nature. You know you're better than a team. You know you're going to win. And sometimes it just takes you a while to get going. Saturday, it's an 11 o'clock kickoff. That's something very, very unusual for LSU. They're going to have to change their regimen. They're going to have to get out to a fast start on this one. Vandy's one of those teams. I've been there before when you're supposed to blow them out, and they hung around and they hang around, and LSU had to kick a late field goal way back in the day to beat them. So did Ed address the early kickoff Saturday?
He addressed it as much as saying that they're going to go to bed early, which is about all you could do and prepare for that kind of game. But he did give Derek Mason, the head coach of Vanderbilt, a lot of credit for the team he has. Says he's a well-coached team. Just in my assessment of Vanderbilt, this is a team that I'm surprised is struggling as much as they are this year.
Yeah.
They opened against Georgia, mm-hmm. so, you know, that's a team that's going to be tough. But Keyshawn Vaughn, their starting running back, he's averaging 4.1 yards a carry, and he was one of those guys in the SEC that you probably just haven't really heard of. But I mean, the guy is good, and they lost 42-24 against Purdue, and this is a team that has struggled defensively, and if they are struggling defensively, they're probably not going to do very well against LSU in their passing offense. This is a Commodore defense that ranks outside the top 100 when it comes to passing defense. So the numbers that you've seen from Joe Burrow the past 3 weeks, I would expect them to be pretty similar. Keyshawn Vaughn in that Purdue game also was 17 attempts, 56 yards. That's not his best. It seems like people are just starting to figure out this offense on film. And there are missing pieces for LSU defensively, and I don't really think the defensive line has done poorly when it comes to the run game. I think it's mostly when you have questions about the secondary. But this will be one of those times that you will see LSU facing a team that has a plus running back, and that hasn't been on the table yet. So it'll be another look for them, and it'll be definitely early. But I don't think this is a team that LSU is not built to handle.
He is Bruce Cabina of The Advocate. Thank you. He joins us each and every Monday. We greatly appreciate it, buddy. Thank you so much. Safe travels to Nashville this weekend.
Sure thing, man. Always.
All right. Appreciate it. Ed Orgeron always talks about 50-50, right? Well, it's not the yardage. It's the attempts. 35 running plays, 33 passing plays. That's what he wants. We'll talk about the Saints next. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles, here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
Here's three pieces of advice to live by. Never play cards with a guy whose last name is Estate. Don't spit into the wind. And always get your sports talk from the Jordy Hultberg Show on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
It was a disappointing loss. You know, I thought in the first half, it was kind of a defensive game, field position game. We were comfortable with that, certainly being on the road. And yet, I think when we watch this tape tomorrow, we're going to be disappointed with tackling. We're going to be disappointed offensively with how we played, particularly up front. Penalties. This will be a hard film to watch for guys.
Oh, it certainly will. Welcome back, the Jordy Hultberg Show, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you just can't shop right at all. The story of the Saints 27-9 loss to the Rams Sunday in Los Angeles. Encapsulates a whole bunch of things. Drew Brees' thumb injury that we now know, a torn ligament. He's going to miss minimum 6 weeks. Bob Rose of Canal Street Chronicles, kind enough to join us. And Bob, that was just one of those. Mama said there'd be days like this. Mama said there'd be days like this. Good afternoon, Bob.
Good afternoon to you, Jordy. And Yeah, Mama said there would be days like this. And I don't know about you. I'm busy filling out medical paperwork, donating all of the ligaments in my hand to Mr. Breeze. But, yeah, seriously, we hope for his quick return to health. More as a person, but certainly need him back on the football field. But the problems, as you pointed out, the problems went far deeper than just Teddy Bridgewater in the game yesterday. No what question. A disappointing performance.
Yeah, so Breeze gets injured early, and then for the third straight game, well, let's just listen to the play, and then we can talk about it.
That ball's out. Picked up by the Saints and Jordan. And now they're saying incomplete pass, and they've blown it dead. Jordan's down the sideline, but Walt Anderson is saying incomplete pass, no fumble. During the break, they made the announcement that this ball was out. It's a fumble. It's not an incomplete pass. It didn't look like it was that close, and Mike Pereira, by saying incomplete pass, they blew it dead.
Just a killer mistake that hurts the Saints so badly. When it's that close, you have to lean the fumble.
Sums it up. They did it again. It's not a conspiracy, is it? But my goodness, it is a conspiracy week after week. I'm not saying that the Saints were going to win the game, Bob, but, you know, momentum is a crazy thing. You're up 13-6. Maybe, just maybe, things go differently. I don't know. We'll never know now.
No, unfortunately, we won't. And you're right. Momentum is nearly everything in sports. And the Saints defense was playing so well at that point. They were giving up some yards, but they were really rising up when the occasion called for it. And I think a play like that, a score like that, could have given them so much momentum going into the second half. And I agree with you. It's hard to look anybody in the face and say, yeah, the Saints would have won if they were given that play. I can't necessarily justify that. But, yeah, I'm with you. I will use the word conspiracy. Unlike some fans, I'm not going to say that the league is out to get the Saints specifically. I don't necessarily feel that way. But I do feel that the commissioner and the powers that be in the league have gone out of their way to protect certain teams, certain big markets, and or certain players, flavors of the month, call them whatever you were. And I think that the Rams are one of those teams. We saw it in the NFC Championship game last year, not just the pass interference call, the playoff game. And then yesterday, Rams offensive tackle Rob Havenstein, he should have charges brought up against him for what he's allowed to do to Cam Jordan, all football game in both of those games. And, those are just a couple examples. You and I could go back and forth for probably hours and hours and hours of not only, these two Rams games, but other certain teams that I mentioned or certain big markets. And I don't want to mention any names because, again, you and I like to talk football. We like to keep it to that topic. But, my God, the league is ruining their own product by things like this.
Yeah. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. In the span of 24 days, Andrew Luck retired. Nick Foles broke his collarbone. Sam Darnold diagnosed with mono. Ben Roethlisberger needs season-ending elbow surgery. And Drew Brees is out 6 weeks at least with a thumb injury. It's not a good time. I mean, they're trying to protect quarterbacks, but, man, they're falling left and right.
Yeah, they are. That's just part of the nature of the game. We're going to hopefully see why the Saints made the decision to pay Teddy Bridgewater so much money to keep him around. Not ready to dig the grave for the New Orleans Saints season just yet. I'm certainly hopeful that Teddy is going to show us a better football game and a better product once he's the guy in practice and he's the guy that the game plan centers around. Yesterday he frankly didn't play well. We know that he is extremely limited when you compare his skill set to a guy like Breeze or Roethlisberger or Luck or the other guys that you mentioned. But Teddy has to make plays. This offense certainly has talent outside of the quarterback position up front, at receiver, and definitely at running back with Kamara and Latavius Murray, who I thought played pretty pretty well yesterday. Teddy needs to get the ball to his playmakers in a position to make plays, and that's not something that his history dictates that he's willing to do. He doesn't turn the ball over, but he's not a playmaker either. That has to change. He has to get the ball into his playmakers' hands, with room for them to operate in the passing game or a smartly called offensive game plan that balances it with the run. And we're going to see how this offense performs going forward for sure.
I'll give the Saints a little pass. You lose your quarterback. It takes you back a little bit. They couldn't stop Aaron Donald at all. It was one of the worst offensive performances since Sean Payton arrived in 2006. For only the third time since then, the Saints failed to score a touchdown. For only the fifth time in that span, the Saints gained less than 250 total yards. And for the very first time, both happened in the same game. I'm tired of the Rams. I don't want to see them for a while unless it really, really counts and it's in a championship game. But now this is going to require the best coaching performance that Sean Payton's got. He's just got a new contract extension over the weekend, so he's going to be with the Saints through 2024. He was asked, do you have a team that's capable without Drew Brees of winning? He says, well, we're going to get to work and we're going to find out.
That's a perfect way to respond. And you and I have had conversations exactly to that point, that the Saints team is built, at least in my opinion, for the long haul. And it's not like that you can build a team for a long haul and expect your 40-year-old quarterback to be there for all of it. So they are building not only for Brees in this current product, but the next signal caller behind the Saints line of scrimmage. And whether that's Teddy Bridgewater or not, I don't know, but they're certainly built for exactly these moments where it doesn't, and I'm not going to go as far as say it doesn't necessarily matter who your quarterback is, but you don't need a Hall of Famer to be successful. So now we're going to find out, and unfortunately sooner than any of us would have hoped for.
Taysom Hill's not going to be running down on kicks anymore, is he? He's not going to be. He's all they've got, so that limits him to what he can do.
Yeah, it does. The announcers. And I'm not big fans of Buck and 8-minute announcers. They kind of brought that up yesterday, but they did so without thinking like they normally would. They mentioned something about Taysom Hill being limited in the offensive game plan in order to protect him in case Bridgewater were to get hurt. And that part of it made sense, I suppose. But then they said, expect him to keep a big role in special teams. I'm scratching my head and I'm like, how many special teams plays do you see a player? Exactly. I scratched my head for a minute and then I considered the source. If Taysom were to be limited, I would certainly expect him to have a seat on the bench on most special teams plays. I think that it wouldn't surprise me anyway if they continued to use him in some offensive packages, certainly to be limited. And to your point, because he is the only guy behind Bridgewater, wouldn't be surprised to see New Orleans kick the tires on a few veteran free agent quarterbacks just for experience, depth, and that just-in-case, worst-case scenario. And if they do find one that they feel comfortable with, maybe they can incorporate Taysom at least back into the offensive thought.
Here's Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Look, the Saints finished with 57 rushing yards against the Rams. You can't run, you can't win. I'm sorry, you just can't.
No. I was extremely disappointed by the performance up front. That 4th-and-1 running play to Alvin Kamara, that they were stopped a little bit short. I definitely wouldn't. It's hard to criticize Kamara in any aspect. But I will criticize him on that play. I thought he should have hit the hole with some authority. I think his dancing around looking for a big play is actually what cost them the first down on that particular play. Now, Kamara's going to be fine going forward. Like I said, it's hard to criticize the guy and what he's done for the last two-plus years in this system. But that offensive line has got to perform better because we even saw it in the first half against the Houston Texans last Monday night. They struggled to open holes again. And Houston has a fine defense. Los Angeles has a very, very good defense in their front seven, at least. But they're facing another physical defensive front in Seattle this weekend. And we know that Teddy Bridgewater is not going to win a football game unless you're able to run the ball. So that's got to be at the very top of the priority list for these offensive coaches going forward.
Yeah, Bob, I think that's where things change as well. But Breeze does some things so great. Teddy Bridgewater's not Drew Breeze. So how do they – what does Sean Payton change, if anything, to best utilize the skill set of Bridgewater and make him productive?
Teddy has always performed well when he's been able to use his tight ends. And Jared Cook, who had a putrid game yesterday, by the way. Jared Cook was brought in precisely for this. Security blanket and an extra elite offensive weapon for Breeze. Well, now it's Bridgewater's show, at least for the next month and a half to 2 months. So I think that they've got to work and figure out a way to get Cook more involved in the game plan and do it early in the game. Mike Thomas, he had another so-so game. I mean, his numbers were okay, but he didn't really stand out as far as a difference maker. Teddy and Michael Thomas have a pretty good chemistry. We saw that in the season finale last year. I would like to see Thomas get downfield a little bit more for Bridgewater to give him a trusted weapon down the field. Did you know, Jordy, that Ted Ginn Jr. was not targeted at all in yesterday's game? We know that Teddy's not a downfield quarterback, but he's going to have to step out of his comfort zone and, again, let his offensive playmakers make the plays. Peyton and offensive coordinator Pete Carmichael have got to be in Teddy's ear all week long saying, hey, just trust your guys. Don't look downfield, freeze, and then go to check down Teddy like we all know. Just get the ball down there and let them make plays. With Breeze is given an awful lot of freedom in this offensive system to sort of freelance, as far as second, third, fourth, fifth reads, and then go back through the progressions if your protection is there. Teddy is not that kind of guy. So they're going to have to call for more aggressive patterns from the receiving core, I think. Still give him that check down guy. Well, two check down guys, really, for someone like Bridgewater to spread the defense a little bit from sideline to sideline. Because this Rams defense, they were smart yesterday. They knew that once Teddy came into the game that they weren't going to be as fearful for the downfield plays. So they clamped up on those underneath patterns. And even though Bridgewater had 17 completions, none of them really went for any consequential yardage. So I would like to see, the Saints offense has always spread the ball from sideline to side, from east to west. But they're going to have to be more aggressive for north and south as far as taking some of that defense and safety pressure from down underneath. Kind of make them at least fearful that Teddy is going to beat them deep if they don't watch their backs. So I think a much more aggressive down the field game plan would be helpful.
Okay, Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. All right, here's what we got. We got at the Seahawks this Sunday, back home for the Cowboys, then the Buccaneers. You go on the road against Jacksonville. You're on the road against Chicago. You're back home against Arizona. Then there's a bye week. So there's 6 weeks. Your seventh week is a bye. Your eighth week, you host the Falcons. Let's say Drew Brees is back for the Falcons game. What's a realistic – you got some tough matchups, Seattle, Dallas, some tough matchups. What do the Saints have to do in this six-week span to stay in the hunt, knowing what's in the NFC South?
Record-wise, I think that if they come out of that 6 weeks, let's be optimistic and think that Drew's going to be back on the field in that Atlanta game after the bye week. So let's say after 6 weeks, if they go 3-3, I still think that they stand a very good chance. It's sitting in a prime playoff position down the stretch. as far as what the team needs to do to get there. They need to come together, and this is a close-knit team, so I like their chances as far as that goes. The defense has got to say to each other in that locker room, hey, listen, our offense is not exactly going to be invisible now, but they're not going to win us a 30-28 last-second game. It's on us to do this now. For a half, they looked yesterday, for a half, they looked capable of doing that. Seattle has some limited offensive weapons, but Russell Wilson is one of the most terrifying offensive players in the entire league. So the Saints defense is going to be tested. Jordy, they're going to have to make plays. They're not just stop the run and sack, put pressure and sack on the quarterback. They are going to have to create turnovers. And I don't see them getting hyper aggressive about it because they know what that could cost them. They're just going to have to realize to count on each other and play as a team and within themselves a little bit better. And they need to do it because, again, they're talking to each other. I guarantee you leaders like Cam Jordan and DeMario Davis are talking to the rest of this team right now and instilling in them, listen, we've been able to count on number nine for so long. He's going to be sitting out. It's his turn to be able to count on us. I think they have the players to do it. But again, over the next six to eight weeks, we're going to find out.
Oh, it's a whole different feel, isn't it? From one week to the next, so much hope. And now we're praying a lot. So we will see. Bob Rose, Canal Street Chronicles. Well done, my friend. Thank you so much for your time. We'll talk to you same time next week, and we'll see how we fare against the Seahawks. Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for everything, Jordy. Take care.
All right. That, of course, brought to you by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets. Over 60 in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. Now, hey, look, we've got this contest going on. Do you have an ugly recliner? If you do, is it time to upgrade? Well, 103.7 The Game and Bordelon's Home Furnishings want to give you a chance to win a brand new recliner. So all you got to do is submit a photo of your ugly recliner to us and tell us why we should choose you to win. We'll pick the five best photos, and then we'll let you, our listeners, vote for the winner. And the winner is going to get a $600 gift certificate to Bordelon's Home Furnishings. So ugly furniture contest, it's on at 103.7 The Game and Bordelon's Home Furnishings. Back to wrap up our number one next.
Who's got game and who's the next big thing at LSU? Jordy Hultberg will set you straight on Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
I felt bad. I felt bad for him, his family, and the Saints in the state of Louisiana because I know how much he means to all of us. And I was talking to some quarterback recruits last night and to remind them that how much that they mean to their team, not in a selfish or boastful way, but the quarterback is the man, especially when he's a great one. So I'm still going to have to remind Joe to run out of bounds. He ain't going to run out of bounds, but I'm going to have to remind him to do it. And Joe means a lot to our football team. Joe is becoming an elite quarterback. And I've been a part of three Heisman Trophy winners, Gino Toretta, Carson Palmer, and Matt Leinart. And I'm starting to see a lot of similarities, or maybe some things even better than I remember those guys doing. So he can become that quarterback, still has a ways to go, but he's going to have to protect himself.
Ed Orgeron today talking about Joe Burrow, his thoughts and prayers going out to Drew Brees and his family. Joe Burrow, living up to the hype, will share his numbers in our number two. Plus, we'll talk to Nick Fontenot about the Cajuns and Ross Dellinger about college football around the country. Our number two on the way, the Jordy Hultberg Show, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana. It's the dream of every trucker to own the best, and the best is Peterbilt. We're back after this.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pulled off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 103.7 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go. Brought to you by DC's Little Capital Exxon I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge for all your tailgating and travel needs. DC's Little Capital Exxon is the place to be. Tigers win by 51, Cajuns win by 71, and the Saints get beat. Drew Brees out for at least 6 weeks with a torn ligament in his throwing thumb, and the Saints get hosed again by the Footlockers, as Cam Jordan calls them. I thought that was classic. But away we go. So LSU on the road this weekend, taking on Vanderbilt. That'll be 11 o'clock kickoff from Nashville. You can hear the ball game right here on 103.7 The Game. Pre-game show starting at 9 a.m. The Cajuns head to Ohio University for a 1 p.m. kickoff. And the Saints like it on the West Coast so much, they're just staying out there. And as Drew Brees gets surgery done, maybe as soon as now, he says, Sean Payton says he's got one opinion. He's going to get a second opinion. Then he's going to make a quick decision and get this thing handled. The Saints will take on the Seattle Seahawks up there in the great Northwest. But we do it every day at this time of day. Let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. CD, do your thing.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
You know, CD, I'm watching college football, and I'm seeing LSU put up numbers. I'm watching Alabama and what they're doing with that quarterback and those wide receivers. If, you know, Florida loses their quarterback, Felipe Franks, for the year, so they're going with their backup quarterback. If things go according to plan and we have the game of the century part two, an undefeated LSU team, an undefeated Alabama team, if it is that way, the first time it was a 9-6 overtime game. That this one is going to be 50-something to 40-something. Because there ain't no D yet in either one of those teams. Good afternoon, my friend.
Good afternoon, Jordy. I would definitely agree with you. You need to pound the under. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised to see if these defenses start stepping their game up a lot more, especially when you look at LSU. Yeah. I mean, you have a lot of guys that are injured. Todd Harris, he's done for the entire season. They got all the great players that are going to wind up stepping their game up. I feel like it's going to be a thing just to look at a little bit further down the line. But Jordy, of course, I think we need to talk about and kind of get out of the way early when it comes to Drew Brees and the Saints. Drew Brees out for 6 to 8 weeks. Seems like the majority of people are saying the recovery period and the timetable is more 7 to 8 weeks. So you'll have him going up until that bye week, I believe, on November the 3rd, which is amazing. They have a bye week right after the Alabama game. I couldn't take more than one heartbreak in about a week, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
But, Jordy, I got to ask you, do you expect to see the Saints regress significantly with Teddy Bridgewater? And if so, when would you start putting in Taysom Hill as a starter?
I'd be ready to – I'd tell both quarterbacks, both of you be ready. We may make a change during the course of the game, depending upon how the defense is. We got to win games. We've got to stay afloat for as long as we can. It's all 53 hands on deck. I am not sold on Teddy Bridgewater. I'm just not. I have to see it. He's going to have to prove it to me. He just is. Now, Sean Payton came out and said that Taysom Hill could be the next Steve Young on the right-handed side. Well, if you think that highly of him, don't hesitate. Put him in. I think they've got to figure out a way to win games until Brees comes back. So whatever that takes, and Bridgewater, look, you're getting paid more than any other backup quarterback. Don't get your feelings in a knot. We're out here to win. So I wouldn't be surprised if they have a game plan for both quarterbacks and both quarterbacks play, unless Bridgewater all of a sudden is going back to his that one season when he was at Minnesota when he was really, really good. But until then, both players be ready, put packages in for both, and turn them loose. You got to win. Somehow, some way, you got to win. And I like Taysom Hill going up against that 12th man up there in Seattle, because that's a physical team. He's a physical quarterback. Teddy Bridgewater looks like a stick. He looks like he's so fragile. So I'm a believer in Taysom Hill. I'd be ready for both of them, to be honest with you.
I think that's all you can do, considering everything. I think it really shows the smarts that the Saints front office had. In case of this kind of emergency, you only have Teddy Bridgewater in there for that 1 year, and you brought up winning. Of course, I think everybody and their mama is already kind of thinking about the big T word. And we're not talking about Tua. We're talking about the dreaded tank word, which I'm not necessarily a big fan of, but it made me wonder, Jordy, what's the likelihood of us, without having to give up the entire 2020 draft, to try and get Joe Burrow maybe in the top 10?
Oh, God, no. That ain't happening. The Saints aren't tanking. Not with this coach, not with these players. They still got a heck of a team. They just have to work around the most important position on the field, but that's when coaching comes into play. You utilize what they do well. You put them in the situation where they can be successful. And your defense showed against the Rams in at least the first half. They were pretty damn good. They just had no offensive help. They got worn out. So no tanking. Burrow, let me see what he does against Alabama. Let me see what he does against Auburn and Florida. And I'm hoping for it. I hope he keeps putting up numbers. I hope he wins the Heisman. But let's just one game at a time. Let's see what happens.
It's going to be a lot of fun to see what happens with this team going forward. It's not like whenever you're looking at the Pittsburgh Steelers, it feels like another knife has been put into the side of one Allen Michael, who two games into the season with the Pittsburgh Steelers, 0-2, no AB, Juju Smith-Schuster hasn't stepped up, and now they have lost Ben Roethlisberger for the entire 2019 season, and possibly his career might be done after undergoing Tommy John surgery. It's ridiculous to see what's going on with the quarterbacks dropping like flies.
Oh, we went through the order of all of them. First, it's Andrew Luck, right? And then you've got Sam Darnold with the mono. You've got the broken collarbone of Nick Foles. You've got Roethlisberger. Now you've got Breeze. You've got Felipe Franks at Florida. You better have a good backup quarterback. So, I don't know. It's just the Steelers, there's something amiss. There's no question about that. The backup quarterback that came in was okay. It was okay, but their defense is just not the same. So I don't know what's going on with the so-called steel curtain. They ain't steel anymore.
Oh, exactly. And this has all happened within the span of 24 days. And you brought up Andrew Luck, and now it seems like one of the greatest kickers of all time. He's about ready to hang it up after missing a couple extra points. That is Adam Vinatieri. Not exactly his best performance yesterday. This is coming off of two really poor performances, and apparently he wants to get out the door. Are you surprised by that?
No, I think, I mean, how long has he been kicking? My gosh.
I believe since like 98, 99.
He's had a Hall of Fame career. I mean, it's been forever and a day. So I'm not surprised. But bringing back Andrew Luck, I mean, Andrew Luck is sitting back going, you know what? I may have played this as smarter than I even imagined. I'm retired. I want to sit out. I want to get my health back together. Can you imagine what a Pittsburgh or other teams would be willing to pay Andrew Luck to come play for them? I mean, you think some quarterbacks are getting paid outlandish money? Yeah. Andrew Luck will set a new pole vault record if he decided to come back and play for somebody. So let's wait and see. I hate to see quarterbacks going down, but man, you got to have one.
You got to have one, and I have to agree. It's a weird time right now to be an NFL quarterback. But flipping on over to college football, what was more impressive this weekend? This is going from the state of Kansas. We're going to kind of pick out of there. more impressive to see Kansas snap a almost decade, I believe a decade-long losing streak on the road against Power 5 programs, beating Boston College, or that tackle on Mississippi State's backup quarterback by Kansas State's defense where the dude went about 360 degrees, about 15 feet in the air.
Yeah. Yeah, he jumped up and they did the helicopter. It was much better than what John Elway did in the Super Bowl. I got to go with the Mad Hatter. I mean, he snuck into Boston College and put a whooping on them. What the heck is going on? Les. And he was running an RPO. My God. Les. I guess he dyed his hair and he saw a new new way of living, a new way of coaching football. I don't know. But Les goes on the road and wins one. They're 2-1. They got a chance to get bowl. Well, let's not go that far.
Not too far, but 2-1. Been a long time.
2-1. 2-1. They just lost to Coastal Carolina, and then they go on the road and beat Boston College. Good for him. Good for Rock Chalk Jayhawk. That was more impressive than the Whirly Bird helicopter ride. So, anyway, thank you, Mr. Domain.
You're welcome, Jordy.
We greatly appreciate the Hot Topics, which, as always, are brought to you by Cajun Chef, the best hot sauce on the planet. The B-Art family for, gee whiz, seriously, almost 90 years. Almost 9 decades putting out the same great product because they care, it's important, and you depend on it. They use the finest spices, they use the finest peppers, and that's why they have the finest hot sauce. Do yourself a flavor. Bring a small bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you wherever you go because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. I don't think Billy Napier woke up Saturday and said, we're going to put a double seven on the board. Well, they did. And they win by 71. What? Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, tells us how and why next.
The Blonde Bomber is back and better than ever as you're locked into the Jordy Hultberg Show on 1037 The Game, 1037thegame.com, and on the free mobile app.
Just trusting my guys, trusting my O-line. They sitting up. They said don't give me a good pocket to sit in, and I trust it. I think it all comes down to trust, you know, sitting in that pocket and just feeling comfortable back there.
That was Levi Lewis of the Raging Cajuns. Didn't have to do too much. He was 10 of 13 for a 181. Had a 58-yard touchdown pass on the day. As the Raging Cajuns destroy Texas Southern 77-6. Nick Fontenot of the Daily Advertiser, kind enough to join us. Nick, what was the roar like in the press box when they told you in the second half we're only going to play 2 10-minute quarters instead of having to put you guys through 30 more minutes of that whatever that was?
Yeah, we were actually kidding right before we got the word that they could pretty much eliminate the third quarter. I don't think anybody would have even noticed. And then all of a sudden they come back and tell us there's going to be 10-minute quarters. So I've never heard of that before. I've never experienced anything like that before or seen it before. But apparently it's something that happens, and it was interesting to behold.
Yes, it was 56-6 at the half. You know, good teams take care of business against teams that they're supposed to, and they certainly did. I mean, they ran again for over 440 yards on 42 carries. That's over 10 yards a pop. It sounds like the offensive line's doing their job, and they got all kind of running backs, right?
Yeah, it could have been very easy to overlook this opponent. You know, that it was a FCS opponent in Texas Southern, and they were coming in as a 47-point favorite. The Cajuns were over this team, so you know they could have really gone out, gone through the motions, picked up a win, you picked up a little, you know, 35-13 type of win, and just kind of ho-hummed it. But that's not what they did. You know, they went in and took care of business, and I don't think their intentions were to run up the score. But,
right.
I mean, they just, when they got the ball, they just kind of ran through the defense. It was one of the least competitive games I've ever watched. Texas Southern really had no answer for anything they did. Every time they got the ball, aside from the end of the half and the end of the game, they scored a touchdown, and they weren't you know, throwing the ball around a whole bunch aside from the first couple of series when Levi Lewis was trying to, you know, get something going in the passing game. But after that, they kept it on the ground, and they brought the fifth and sixth and seventh running backs onto the field, and Texas Southern couldn't answer them, and they just kept scoring touchdowns. So I liked what I saw as far as them executing their game plan to perfection. Mm-hmm. Their preparation was there, and they didn't really, you know, take any plays off despite the fact that, you know, if it was 56-6 and a half and the game was well in hand, you know, all the players they got to play, it was just good, some good experience for the team and a lot of positives to take away from that game.
Nick Fontenot, the advertiser, we know about Mitchell, we know about Calais, we know about Ragos, but who in the Sam Hill is this guy Wisham? Who is he?
Yeah, T.J. Wisham's actually a heck of a story. He, out of high school, he had a couple of offers to go to all of the military academies, ended up choosing the Army. He spent some time at West Point, spent a couple of years on the Army football team, you know, and we talked to him today at the press conference, and he said, you know, he, out of high school, it was the best thing for him, but after a couple of years, he realized the military life and the military way of things, of doing things, just wasn't for him. It wasn't a negative experience. It's just mm-hmm. something that he wanted to, you know, get away from. And he's from the Baton Rouge area. He went to Episcopal in Baton Rouge. And so he had an opportunity to come and play with the Cajuns. And, you know, he walked on at first, and now he's a scholarship player. And he's one of those guys that, you know, all offseason long, we've talked about Mitchell and Ragos and Kale as this, you know, quote-unquote three-headed monster. And, right. And don't get me wrong, those three guys are as talented as any running backs in the country. But anytime you talk to those guys, they always talk about, hey, you know, it's not just us three. It's our whole running back room. And, you know, sometimes you give them a look like, yeah, you know, you guys are just saying that. But you uh-huh. know, Saturday night we got to see a lot of those guys. And Wisham was the only player, the only running back that didn't have a touchdown. And he was the one that went over 100 yards. And you had, yeah. you know, Ashton Johnson and Chris Smith. They had touchdowns. And all those running backs that the big three had been talking to us about, they were able to shine Saturday. So, you know, if one of those guys should happen to go down, there's – four or five guys behind them that's going to come in and not skip much of a beat. I mean, obviously those three guys are just a notch above the rest of the room, but those guys in the room have some talent, and the running backs behind those big three can get the job done.
Wish them 10 carries for $103. Nick Fontenot, the advertiser. It's the vogue thing to talk about today with all the injuries to quarterbacks. We've seen it at the University of Florida. We've seen it with the Steelers. We've seen it with the Saints. Levi Lewis's backup got in, did pretty well. Talk about this kid.
Yeah, it was good to see. You know, we didn't know a whole lot about him, and it was, you know, his name is Javi Magalay, and you know, I was interested to see how he did. I thought he looked impressive, you know, and it was good to get that experience because you never know. Just as you said, I mean, the Saints yesterday are looking at, you know, a potential Super Bowl run, and you know, one pass goes the way it went, and Drew Brees is out for a significant amount of time, and now you're going to the backup. So, I mean, it's not out of the question to think that something similar may happen to Levi Lewis. You hope it doesn't, but if it does, now you have, you know, your backup quarterback got a little bit of time. They also got two other quarterbacks in there too, so all the quarterbacks right. got time. And that was the main takeaway from the game mm-hmm. altogether was that, you know, you got a lot of guys that wouldn't normally get to play, but now this new redshirt rule where you get four games and you get a lot
Absolutely.
Of these guys that – under a normal circumstance or a couple of years back, all of those guys would have just been standing on the sidelines because you don't want to lose their eligibility. Now you're able to play them for four games and still able to get that redshirt. So all of those guys got invaluable experience Saturday night to be able to play, you know, at Cajun Field, to be able to play in front of the fans. And if you need them down the road, now they can revert back to some of those things they learned on Saturday night. So that's what one of the things Billy Napier said after the game was that the legislature that passed to be able to play those guys for four games is going to pay Brilliant. Dividends coming up later on in the year.
Yeah, he's Nick Fontenot, the Daily Advertiser. They're not going to play Saturday. You got to go up to Ohio to take the Bobcats, a Mid-American Conference school, with their head coach. People will recognize it. Frank Solich, who used to be the coach at Nebraska, now does a really, really good job for the Bobcats. And it seemed like Billy Napier and his staff had done some pre-prep for Ohio University during the week leading into the Texas Southern game, because he knew an awful lot about them right after the game.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you don't want to say that they were looking ahead to Ohio, like looking over Texas Southern, but clearly
when you have
a team coming in that you beat 77-6, you probably had maybe a little eye on Ohio already. So, yeah, they're prepared for them. This is going to be probably the best defense they faced all year, you know, aside from maybe Mississippi State, definitely going to be the best quarterback they faced thus far. And Frank Solich, I mean, Frank Solich has silently been at Ohio since 2005, so he has a program built. He has a standard there at Ohio. They were picked to win their conference. And so this is going to be a test. This is going to be kind of a measuring stick to find out where you are. You're 2-1 in the season. If you can pick up a win at Ohio, that's really going to be the difference between, you know, a super successful season or just a ho-hum middle-of-the-road season. So I think this is a major test for the Cajuns. I think Napier was right to maybe kind of look maybe past Texas Southern a little bit to this game and get prepared to this game. And I think they're going to have them about as prepared as they could be.
It's a 1 o'clock kickoff in Athens, Ohio. Just for your reference point, they opened up the season. Ohio beat Rhode Island 41-20. Lost a close one at Pitt 20-10. Lost a shootout at the Thundering Herd of Marshall 33-31. So they're coming home. This will be quite the test. So mission accomplished. Anybody get how's the injury front? Everybody ought to be healthy for this one?
Yeah, not too many people got injured. You know, they still have a few injuries on the offensive line, a few injuries at wide receiver. But, you know, the guys behind the starters in those positions have stepped up and done well. So they really haven't missed a whole lot of steps. So as far as major injuries, they don't have many to talk about. And that's pretty good going into, you know, what seems to be one of your toughest matchups of the season. So I think they're going to be pretty healthy. They're going to have all hands on deck, and they're going to need them in order to beat a good Ohio team.
I greatly appreciate your time. As always, Nick Fontenot joins us in the 3 o'clock hour each and every Monday. Thank you so much. Keep up the great work with the advertiser, and we'll talk to you after the UL Ohio game next Monday. Thank you, my friend.
All right, Jory. Thanks for having me.
All right. Prejean's. Oh, Cher, you know how good the food is over there at Prejean's. Well, we've got a $50 gift certificate giveaway for you. You enter to win the $50 gift certificate to Prejean's in the 1037 The Game Clubhouse at 1037thegame.com. You just enter. Enter. It's so simple. And we're going to give you a $50 gift certificate to Prejean's. Now, how happy is your wife, your girlfriend, your significant other going to be? Prejean's, are you kidding me? Yeah. Yum, yum. We'll be back. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Yes. The Mad Hatter gets a win and more trouble at USC. And what's he think about the Tigers and the Crimson Tide? That's coming up next.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Hultberg Show on 103.7 The Game.
All right, welcome back. Let's talk all things college football as we do each and every day at this time of day with our good friend from Sports Illustrated, Mr. Ross Dellinger. Ross, another crazy, crazy weekend. And the first thing that comes to my mind is Pitt, Penn State, and we got a game, and Pitt kicks a field goal late in the game when they're down, but I don't get it. Explain that game to me, and why did Pat Narduzzi do that with that key? I don't get it.
I wish I could explain it to you. You know, he was asked about, or actually he wasn't even asked about it today at his press conference. I think he opened the press conference talking about, like, addressing it because he knew it was going to be asked about. And he gave this long, you know, kind of rambling speech. It sounds like it probably went on for a couple minutes about why he did it. And basically what he said was, you know, we had a second down in one play and a third down in one play that we ran, and it didn't work. And the fourth down in one play would have been, along the same lines of the other two as far as the play. So I think he basically didn't have faith that his team was going to score on fourth and one. You know, he had no faith that it was going to happen. So they decided to kick the field goal, which of course they missed, which exacerbated the decision. But it was probably the most baffling decision of the weekend. You know, you're on the road, you're a pretty big underdog. You've got you're down by seven inside of 5 minutes. And you kick a field goal from the 1 yard line. And even if you don't get it on fourth and goal, you're putting your opponent 99 yards away from the end zone. And it just didn't make a whole lot of sense. And he's trying to justify it in different ways, but he's not going to find a whole lot of people that are in agreement. I got a couple of texts over the weekend from some coaches. One of them not so nice about the decision. You know, there was not a lot of coaches that agreed with that call.
Yeah, well, they get chastised if they did it, so they can pile on all they want, and I agree. That made absolutely no sense. I'm wondering what's going on in the state of Kansas. You know, you're replacing a legend at Kansas State. Not many people were happy. They thought it was a nepotism hire with the athletic director who was the agent of the coach. Anyway, and they're now – Kansas State's 3-0, and then Les goes on the road at Kansas and steals one from Boston College. Go figure. Kansas, the mecca of college football.
I know, man. It was incredible. I watched Kansas State-Mississippi State game pretty much the whole way through. And, you know, speaking of Les, Kansas State was out there in the I formation with fullbacks and two tight ends, and they were ramming it down the Bulldogs right down their throat. And when they wanted to pass, they were doing play action. Yeah. They had open people. It was impressive, and they were doing it the old-fashioned way. The Les way, which Les didn't do on Friday night. You know, he went into Boston College. They changed their offense a little bit. You know, Kansas opened up barely beating Indiana State and then losing at home to Coastal Carolina. And they were kind of running the same old Les Miles offense. And I think he kind of learned after that Coastal Carolina game in which Kansas scored 7 points is that, you know, really ought to implement some more of this spread RPO stuff. And they did. And we saw it score 48 points. So I would imagine that it'll just keep on blossoming that new offense in Les's team there. So, you know, we talk all the time about how Les doesn't change and didn't change at LSU, and that's very true. He didn't, and that was really the ultimate reason why, you know, his team struggled and why he was fired. But he's kind of learned, I think in a way he's learned the lesson, and they're doing some RPO stuff. I talked to him Saturday afternoon, a day after the game, and you can find a story on that on SI.com about just him reflecting on that game, you know, and he talks a little bit about the RPO. Kathy Miles talks a little bit about how during his time off from coaching, we all know, you know, Les was doing some acting and commercial stuff and media and TV analysts. But we did know is that he thought seriously about making a run for a political office in Louisiana. So she decided to mention that to me on the phone. So, but a good thing he decided not to do that and was back coaching, and now I think he's happy he made the move.
I'm just trying to picture Les in a political debate with the way that he talks. That would have been just priceless. I don't know what they call when they play. You know, they have these rivalry games, the Iron Bowl, the Bucket, whatever. But Chris Klieman doing a job at Kansas State and Les winning at Kansas. That's unbelievable. And the other guy that I must admit I was dead wrong about when they made the hire was Herm Edwards at Arizona State. I said, what in the world are y'all doing? And Herm, with a little help, goes out and upsets Michigan State. How about that one?
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up. I just got off the phone with Herm. I have a story on SI.com later this week about his new freshman quarterback and what they did at Michigan State on that last drive. It was incredible. It was like a 10-play drive. True freshman quarterback marches him down, you know, and it was really impressive. So, Herm's got it rolling, man. They had some impressive wins last year, and he's building a program. You know, it was a hire, just kind of like the Les Miles hire, and in a lot of ways like the Mack Brown hire. I think it was maybe thought of on the surface as a, you know, a bad hires, you know, older guys out of the game kind of thing. And we're all seeing them have pretty good success all of a sudden.
Yeah. His athletic director, Ray Anderson, was his former agent. Everybody talked about cronyism, but he's winning. You play to win the game, and he's doing so. In the SEC, there wasn't much to talk about, kind of one of those weeks, but the big topic is everybody before the season started just said, put it down. It's going to be Clemson versus Alabama. That's it. Are we starting to lean away from that a little bit? Bama looks great offensively. My goodness, they can pass that ball. But defensively, you know, I said this earlier. They had the game of the century back in whenever it was, 2011, LSU-Alabama. It was a 9-6 overtime game. If things go according to plan and both teams meet in November and they're undefeated, game of the century too, I'm gonna bet the over. I'm talking 50-something, 40-something, the way they play offense. Can you believe that?
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say 50-something, but I would not be surprised if that game was like, you know, 38-28 or something like that. You know, it is crazy. Mm-hmm. And that speaks to the evolution of football, and in the passing, just evolution, just the strides that these young quarterbacks in just the spread offense has made in the last few years. That's the greatest example right there, is that two teams, LSU and Alabama, could play somewhat of a shootout. You know, 10 or less than 10 years after playing a 9-6 game. So that, in that, you know, a couple years after, that's when Saban went to the spread, and obviously we've seen LSU finally go to the spread. It took a little longer. It speaks to, I think, the situation we're in college football these days, where you got to score to win now. The offenses are just too spread out. Mm-hmm. They're too talented. You got to score to win. You don't see a lot of the 9-6s anymore. You don't see a lot of the 3-2s. Every now and then you'll sneak up and get one, but it's very rare these days.
Yeah, we're talking with Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated, and then there's Maryland, who put up huge numbers in their first couple of games, and then they go on the road at Temple, and they get beat 20-17. What was a bigger upset, that one or Colorado after beating Nebraska losing to Air Force?
Yeah, there were a few letdowns. Those are the two biggest ones. I think USC, after their 2-0 start and pounding Stanford, going to BYU and getting beat by former LSU offensive line coach, now BYU offensive coordinator Jeff Grimes, by the way, got the Cougars 2-1. Offense isn't necessarily going to be lighting the world on fire, but they've done enough, you know, and we saw that last year, his first year there. So they've had a lot of success there. But those have been three big kind of letdowns, you know, in Colorado, in Maryland, and in USC. I think Colorado and Maryland can be lumped together. Two first-year coaches. You know, clearly their programs aren't to the level that they want consistency-wise. You know, and that kind of speaks to that. You know, at USC, obviously there's a lot more stuff going on, but it was disappointing, you know, to see Mel Tucker and Mike Locklear and them, after having such big wins, go and lose those games, especially Colorado at home to a service academy. But I got a text from someone out there at the Pac-12 after that game, said, lesson learned, do not schedule military academies. And, you know, we see Army have almost pulled the upset and has in the past. Those guys come in, man, they come in with that crazy offensive system, and you never know what can happen.
Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. The quote of the day was, I'll get fined for the rest of my life if I comment on that. Will Muschamp talking about his team would have pulled within a 24-17 halftime deficit, but instead got no points out of a sequence on why a close call at the goal line wasn't reversed to see if it was a touchdown. Did you talk to Will Muschamp this weekend, or did you talk to anybody about that?
No, I did. I did not. I did hear from some LSU people who were watching the game and wondering why Alabama was getting all this, you know, this treatment. So that certainly hasn't died down. That was a great quote. He was fired up at halftime in that halftime interview. Rightfully so. You know, I don't think that he was in for his touchdown. And I think that they reviewed it. I don't think he would have been in. But, man, in a situation like that, you got to review that. That's why we have review.
Yes. Yes. No question. All right. You, as I recall, in our last conversation, you got to stay home in Washington, in our nation's capital this weekend. But I got a funny feeling you're looking for that flight from Washington to Atlanta. And then you're going to make the little drive to Athens because the game of the week, number 7, Notre Dame at number 3, Georgia. And this is the game that bumped Alabama LSU from the primetime CBS doubleheader. Now, Notre Dame, Georgia, primetime CBS, 7 o'clock Central, 8 o'clock Eastern. It should be a heck of a game.
It should. It should. Yeah, and I'll be down there. You know, I stayed home this past weekend because it was just a – Not a stellar list of games, but that one is big and has incredible CFP implications. We saw a couple years ago Georgia go up to Notre Dame and win that game by 1 point. If they didn't, you know, they probably wouldn't have made the playoffs. So that was almost like a early season quarterfinal game. It kind of feels like that again. You know, you got two. You know, Notre Dame has not looked great. You know, I saw the spread, and I think it was Georgia, like maybe 2 touchdowns. I want to say it was out. It was crazy.
Really?
It was even bigger than I would have thought, because Notre Dame hasn't looked great. They've struggled here and there. Okay. I saw a stat from them. It is, by the way, 14 points. It opened at 12.5, has moved to 14 points, which does seem high for a top 10 matchup. But yeah, Notre Dame, I saw a stat the other day. Notre Dame's given up something like 5 yards or 4.8 yards a play or a carry. Their defense just hasn't gotten to that point. You know, you saw in Louisville, against Louisville, they just struggled at times defensively, especially. I mean, Louisville was moving the ball on them. So, you know, it's going to be interesting. I think this is a game where Georgia could – really make their statement and kind of show everybody, look, it ain't going to be much of a competition in the SEC East.
Yeah. I'm with you, Ross Dellinger. Okay, so we've got 3 weeks in the books. If we were playing the college football semifinals today, based on what they have accomplished so far this season, with that caveat, who are your top 4 teams as of right here, right now?
Oh, man. Even talking about Alabama, and, you know, you mentioned it earlier, they did struggle, especially at times defensively. South Carolina with the ball on them. I still think they're in the top 4. And in Clemson, yeah, Trevor Lawrence has got 5 interceptions. Okay. I still think that Clemson is in the top 4. And I think you got to put Georgia in there. I think the last spot is the one that is really tough. You know, LSU, Oklahoma, and Ohio State, LSU. It's a fight for those 3, man. It just really is right now. I'd probably put Oklahoma in, but, LSU looked really good against Texas.
They've got the signature win to date, so that's why I put LSU in there. But a lot of football left to be played. So where's your favorite place to go dine in Athens?
Ooh, you know, it's funny. I've only been there twice. I've been there for 3 times. I've been there for an LSU baseball series, and I've been there when I covered Auburn football game. This is only be my third time back in Athens. So, I mean, that downtown's incredible. I don't really have one specific place, but, you know, Athens is, for me, number one or number two college towns. The problem with Athens is on a football weekend, you can't stay there. You know, I'll be in Atlanta.
No, that's right. That's right. Any recommendations for LSU fans who are heading to Nashville because they just won't go to bed? They'll just stay up because of that 11 o'clock a.m. kickoff.
That is a rough kickoff time if you're going to be in Nashville Friday night. You know, don't stay out too late, but it's hard not to in Nashville. I love, you know, the downtown. Nashville is a lot of different spots, but that downtown stretch of all the honky-tonks, it's so much fun. There's like a – I don't remember what it's called. There's a four-story honky-tonk on the corner there that is just a blast. Each story, each floor is like a different kind of bar. And it's a great, fun city. It's up there.
The LSU's players won't be there. Ed O said today they'll be in bed by 9 p.m. We'll see. All right, Ross Dellinger, we'll talk to you next Monday. We'll recap the Bulldogs and the Irish. I think the Bulldogs smoke them. And some bigger games to talk about then. So thank you, my friend. Take care.
Yep. Thanks, Jordy.
All right, buddy. You take care. Ross Dellinger, Sports Illustrated. Back history lesson, birthday wishes, and wrapping things up. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 1037thegame.com.
All the best guests join the Jordy Helfrich Show. If you missed an interview, you can check it out on demand at 1037thegame.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, 54 minutes after the hour, time to get back to business as we do each and every day at this time of day. History lesson time. It was on this day, September 16th. The year was 2012. The National Hockey League imposed a league-wide lockout. It was the league's second work stoppage in 8 years. It doesn't pay to have lockouts anymore. You lose your fan base, you lose your television revenue, get the deals done. And the hockey NHL is making a resurgence. It's getting a little bit more popular. Football's up next. We'll see what happens with the NFL, but they ain't going to have a work stoppage. That's not going to happen. All right, birthday wishes. If today, September 16th, is your birthday, man, happy birthday from all of us to all of you. Let's see, Nick Jonas of the Jonas Brothers, happy 27th birthday. Happy 24th birthday to Aaron Gordon of the Orlando Magic. Won the slam dunk contest 1 year, right? Happy 63rd birthday to the illusionist, David Copperfield. And happy 40th birthday to Shorty Got Low, 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 Flo Rida. How about that? Yes, happy birthday to them. If it's your anniversary, happy anniversary. Hope you keep adding year after year after year to it. All right, tomorrow, more on LSU. We'll get a scouting report on Ohio University. Their quarterback, Nathan Rourke, has the most touchdown passes in Bobcat history. So he's a good one. Tough task for the Raging Cajuns. Special thanks to our Monday lineup, Brooks Cabina of The Advocate, Bob Rose talking Saints and the Canal Street Chronicles, Nick Fontenot of The Advertiser, Ross Dellinger of Sports Illustrated. CD, he is the stick that stirs the drink back in the 237 Roof Studios and the Master Control Suite. Great job, as always, getting us the sound and the highlights. We greatly appreciate that. And thanks to all of you for listening. And to our partners, you know, we couldn't do it without you. We really couldn't. So, hope you enjoyed Monday's show. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, 2 to 4 p.m. Same great station, 1037 The Game. And around the world, 1037thegame.com. All right? So, We've got all of that for you. I'm supposed to say something here, and I'm going to find it before I get in trouble with the people. I don't want to get in trouble. I want to emphasize. Where is it? Oh, well, I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out another day. And Ben Love's Prep Power Hour is going to be on Tuesday. Okay? The Prep Power Hour, Tuesday. Great high school football in Acadiana. Until tomorrow, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.